Shortly. Please in listen only mode.
All right. Good morning. Please take a seat, everybody. Good morning.
Oh, that is fine. I'm sorry.
It is. And welcome, everybody, to today's edition of the Board of Public Works. As you see, we got a lot of elbow room today. The comptroller, unfortunately, will not be able to join us today because she's taking her daughter to camp this morning. So it'll just be us this morning. So it's going to be fine.
She told me I got it. Like, she's good.
With that, we will start with the business of the day. Mrs. Secretary, good morning.
Morning to you, Governor, and good morning to you, Mr. Treasurer. There are 21 items and one report of an emergency procurement contract award on agenda this morning. However, at the request of Baltimore City Community College, I'm withdrawing item 4. And at the request of St. Mary's College, I'm withdrawing item 19, leaving 19 total items for your consideration this morning in the emergency procurement report. I'm happy to assist with answering any questions.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And I understand we have a few speaker requests that are taking place this morning. So in the interest of time, we'll just ask that the speakers limit their remarks to 3 minutes. And Mr. Secretary, I'd ask you what service timekeeper. First, we have a speaker request for item 6, which is a request to award a $100,000 grant to the Lakeland Community Heritage Project. And I would like to recognize Maxine Gross, who signed up to support virtually this morning. So, Ms. Gross, can you hear us?
Yes, I can, Governor.
Wonderful. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning from Lakeland, the historic African-American community of College Park. Yes. I'm Maxine Gross. I'm chairperson of the Lakeland Community Heritage Project. Our primary work over the last two decades has been the creation, expansion, and utilization of the Lakeland Digital Archive. Material from that archive has been used very broadly, including for books, scholarly research, documentaries, and exhibitions, including Reclaiming Lakeland, which you can see today at the College Park Aviation Museum. It's also been a prominent source in the reparations process that we've been undergoing with the city of College Park. Currently, we're working to level up our capacity and our offerings through a community benefits agreement related to a former urban renewal site. For the first time, we'll have a physical space. The Lakeland Legacy Center will open in the fall of 2027. And there we will continue our work and open the center as a gateway to Lakeland and our local region. This funding will allow appropriate preparations for the success of this next stage in the evolution of the Lakeland Community Heritage Project as we preserve and share the stories of Maryland and its people. Thank you, Governor. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, and thank you so much for your leadership on this. This work is vital and important, and we're grateful for the leadership that you show. So thank you so much. And thanks so much for joining us this morning as well. I would also like to take a moment to highlight item 5. That is a request to award $8 million grant to Baltimore City to replace the city's computer-aided dispatch system, or as many of us know as the CAD system. The CAD system is imperative. It's imperative because it really does serve as the hub for all of our emergency communication systems that exist within the city, where every 911 call that happens, it begins with CAD. Every 911 call when a person is calling for aid or assistance, that's the system that it will go into. And so whether you're talking about police, fire, EMS, they're the first ones to be able to process that. It is absolutely critical that this is something that is supported, particularly because the CAD system in Baltimore City alone handles over 2 million calls a year. And so right now we have a CAD system in Baltimore City that's relying on software that is over 20 years old. And we know that for our first responders and the people whose job it is to make sure that every time someone calls in who needs support, that they have up-to-date and a reliable system that can make sure that the people who need the help can get it quickly. And so having this and supporting this, we feel like it's something that's not just important, but what it's also going to do is that when you're looking at the CAD systems, it will do things like have an expanded 911 diversion, a faster emergency response, and enhanced security and monitoring. So I just wanted to publicly acknowledge this and also say thank you to Mayor Scott. Thank you to City Council President Cohen and the members of the Baltimore City Council for upping this and supporting this incredibly important work to make sure that our folks are not just working together, but also that for all of our systems, that our people are then able to get the supports that they need and that they deserve. With that, are there any other questions on this secretary's agenda? No.
Okay.
Great. If not, may I have a motion to approve the secretary's agenda?
So move.
I will be the second, and the secretary's agenda advances. So thank you. We will proceed with the Department of Natural Resources agenda. Good morning, Ms. Wilson. How are you?
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Treasurer, Emily Wilson, Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 12 items on our DNR real property agenda today for your consideration. Happy to try to answer any questions.
Is there any discussion on the DNR agenda? Okay. May I have a motion to approve the DNR agenda? So moved. Wonderful. And I will second and approve. Thank you so much, Ms. Wilson. We will proceed with the University System of Maryland. Mr. Hickey, good morning.
Governor, Mr. Treasurer, Tom Hickey representing University System of Maryland. There are two items for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Is there any discussion with USM agenda?
Discussion.
All right. May I have a motion to approve the USM agenda?
So moved.
All right. Thank you so
much. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll proceed with the MDOT agenda. Ms. Radomski, good morning.
Morning, Governor, Mr. Treasurer. For the record, my name is Valerie Radomski, Chief Procurement Officer for the Maryland Department of Transportation. Today, we are presenting 21 agenda items for your consideration. This agenda includes 6 awards to small businesses totaling $1.8 million and 2 awards to minority business enterprises totaling $4.7 million. We have representatives available to answer any questions you may have.
Good item, sir. Is there any discussion on the MDOT agenda? May I have a motion to approve the MDOT agenda?
So moved.
Outstanding. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we will conclude with the DGS agenda. Secretary Charger, good morning.
Morning, sir. Mr. Governor, Mr. Treasurer. For the record, I'm a Chief Charger, Secretary of the Maryland Department of General Services. Today, the department is presenting 63 items in our agenda, including 1 report of an expedited procurement. We are withdrawing 4 items today. Those 4 items are 15 CGL, 27 CGL, 48 IT, and 62S. Our agenda does feature 42 capital grants and loans, totaling more than $42 million. We're going to highlight one in particular very quickly. That's item 58 CGL, which provides $303 million to the B&O Railroad Museum, now officially known as the National Museum of Railroad History and Innovation, for infrastructure improvements to the museum to support $38 million renovation there. That renovation includes rehabilitation of their historic South Carr Works building, creation of a new entrance to the museum, 2 new classrooms, and a new exhibition and event space. Last week, I was excited to attend their announcement of their rebranding, which went very well, and we're excited to continue to work with the executive director, Chris Holland, who's been a great partner, and we look forward to their 200th anniversary of the railroad next year. As we continue to keep an eye on our minority business participation, we do have 3 contract actions to certified minority businesses who are also certified small businesses, totaling approximately $13.9 million. And we have agency representatives here to answer any questions you may have.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Also, on the capital side, for 6CGL, for the Helping Out Mission, it's really good work. And so thank you, Ms. Secretary. I would like to call up item 49, which is a request from the State Board of Elections to award a $84.9 million contract to Election Systems and Software LLC to require a new statewide voting system to help to modernize Maryland's election operations and also Maryland's election security. I'd like to ask Jared DeMarinis, the State Administrator for Elections, to share more about this request. Good to see you, Mr. Director, Mr. State Administrator.
Good seeing you, Governor. Seeing you, Director. Well, thank you for this opportunity to talk about this. But first, I just want to say something about the primary election. Will be certified tomorrow, so that's all good. And we have 104 days till the general election. And if you want to know more about dates, deadlines, and signing up as an election judge, please download our app, Go Vote Maryland. So we are trying to make sure everything there. But now, as to the business at hand, which is about the new voting system here. You are correct. We are procuring a new comprehensive statewide voting system intended for implementation to support the 2028 presidential election. This project includes the acquisition, deployment, and support of a secure, compliant, user-friendly voting solution that meets all federal and state regulatory requirements. This selected system will modernize election operations, improve accessibility, and electoral security. It's a five-year contract with two-year option periods, and it's a firm fixed price with a not-to-exceed contract here. So that is the maximum amount of money that is going to be there. And payments will only occur after meeting deliverables. So there's no prepayments of anything ahead of time. The system in which we're procuring has been federally certified and state certified for use in the state of Maryland. So it is a federally certified, state certified system, period. The RFP itself has been a transparent process. It began over 2 years ago. We've included updates on the RFP in every one of my state administrators' reports for during that period there, as well as including it on our quarterly joint chairman's reports to the General Assembly. So everyone's been quite aware of this contract here. The structure of the contract has been what has been in question here a little bit here. And I wanted to talk about that. It was written 2 years ago when there was only one where there was no federally certified system to the voluntary voting system guidelines of the EAC to the 2.0 standard. Every system was at the 1.0 standard. So doing our due diligence on the landscape there and to increase competitive biddings from vendors, we have created a pathway so that Maryland will start out with a federally certified, state certified system for the 2028 election, but will have the most current, most secure system for the 2030 election. So the 2030 election, sorry, I put too many zeros there, too many 20s. The contract itself has been reviewed for legal sufficiency and approved by the Attorney General, and has also been reviewed by the Office of State Procurement and other agencies. Why is all this needed here? Because the current system is over 11 years old. They no longer manufacture parts for it. The ballot marking device, I believe that you voted on, they don't make them anymore. Like, so, it, you know, every time they break, we lose one. And that's our accessibility voting as well. So therefore, you know, it's, you know, replacement parts are impossible to get. It's important. And also the supporting infrastructure is also equally as old and needs to be replaced. So again, procuring this voting system here and associated infrastructure will position Maryland to continue administering secure, reliable, accessible elections, ensuring vendor support, current technology availability, and operation resiliency for years to come. So with that, I like your support and your both of your votes. So thank you.
Thank you so much, State Administrator.
I'm used to doing that at the General Assembly. I need votes.
Thank you so much. I know we have a few additional speaker requests for this item. And I first like to recognize James Rundlett, who signed up to speak in support of this item. Good morning, James. How are you?
Good morning. Good.
Outstanding.
My name is James Rundlett. I'm here to read a statement on behalf of ESNS. Our CEO was supposed to be at the previous meeting, but couldn't be here today due to some travel conflict. So I'll be reading a statement on the company's behalf. So good morning, Governor Moore, Treasurer Davis. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today regarding the proposed voting system contract with the state of Maryland. We were extremely pleased that our company was selected as the vendor for the procurement of the new voting system. This voting system is our top of the line voting equipment. It's currently certified in 26 states, being used statewide in Connecticut, South Carolina, as well as forward thinking jurisdictions like Fairfax County, Virginia. We're excited to have it in the state of Maryland. Through every election cycle, our shared objective has remained the same: ensuring voters can have confidence that every eligible vote is cast as intended and counted as cast. Marylanders can be assured the voting system procured will instill confidence with the accuracy of the results. We recognize that questions have been raised regarding future system enhancements. We respect those questions and understand the importance of ensuring that every procurement decision complies fully with applicable laws, regulations, and contractual obligations. Let me be clear. ESNS meets the requirements of the solicitation, the contract, and Maryland certification processes. Any system deployed for use in Maryland elections will be required to satisfy the applicable federal and state certification requirements before it's placed into service. This system for approval today has been federally and state certified for use. As for future enhancements to the voting system, ESNS has a long history of successfully navigating certification processes and foresees no issues with meeting the contractual timeline and obligations by the 2030 election. If approved, we view this contract not as the end of a procurement process, but as a partnership that will serve Maryland voters well for many years to come. We remain committed to supporting the State Board of Elections and local election officials with the highest levels of service, responsiveness, security, and technical expertise. On behalf of the entire ESNS team, thank you for your consideration, your thoughtful review of this procurement, and your continued commitment to election integrity. We look forward to continuing our partnership with Maryland and helping ensure secure, accurate, accessible, and transparent elections for many years to come.
Great. Thanks so much, Mr. Runnell. Thank you so much. And I would next, I'd like to recognize Susan Greenhalgh, who has signed up to speak in opposition of this item. Ms. Greenhalgh, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, and good morning, Governor Moore and Treasurer Davis. I am a senior advisor on election security for Free Speech for People. I've studied voting systems and certification for over 20 years on behalf of voters. I'm speaking today on behalf of our organization, as well as Common Cause Maryland and Save Our Votes Maryland, which is not suing the state. We offer public comments regarding our concerns about the proposed system purchase. We urge the board not to approve this contract so it can be restructured and reissued to best serve Maryland voters and taxpayers. We do not make this request lightly, but we do so because, and we don't want to stand in the way of a new system for 2028, nor do we seek to oppose the SBE. We have met with the SBE and appreciate their cooperation and information, but we remain gravely concerned that this purchase would commit Maryland to a contract for a system that has not been demonstrated, tested, or certified. The purchase contract the SBE proposed includes two different versions of the voting system, one that is certified to the old, outdated federal voting system standards from 2005 that would be delivered before 2028, and a second version of the system that the vendor represents will be certified to the new, updated standards from 2021, termed VVSG 2.0, delivered to Maryland before 2030. The second version of the system is not yet certified by the Federal Election Assistance Commission or the State Board of Elections. A May 19th letter from the vendor ESNS acknowledged that it hadn't even submitted a system suitable to Maryland for federal testing to the new standards. It also states that the core hardware would remain the same core hardware, raising questions that some of the hardware elements may be replaced. Further, in a statement to the press, ESNS said, the Maryland State Board of Elections has not predetermined which 2.0 version will be implemented in the state, revealing that the system Maryland would procure is still undefined and unidentified. All of this suggests the future system is still under development, but it's a part of the contract. In short, this contract would commit Maryland to a voting system that is still under development at a premium price with potential unforeseeable costs. We wish to highlight that in its SBE meetings, the board voted only to certify 1.0. It did not vote to certify the 2.0 system or to approve the terms of the contract. According to the RFP and press reports, the purchase price also includes a third system to replace Maryland's current electronic ballot delivery and online ballot marking system, and this has also not been publicly discussed by the SBE or demonstrated to the public. In sum, we respectfully ask the Board of Public Works not to approve this contract as proposed and pursue this purchase through a revised procurement that could be done by issuing two RFPs, one that is expedited to cover a short-term acquisition before the 2028 election through a purchase or short-term lease, and another RFP to purchase the new 2.0 system on a longer timeline to ensure the prospective candidate systems are properly developed, demonstrated, and certified. Additionally, we understand that the current lease could be extended, and this could be exercised to enable reissuing the RFP. Thank you very much, and I welcome your questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Greenhalgh. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple. Ms. Greenhalgh, earlier in your testimony, you mentioned the cost of it, but then you just said we should do two, a short Isn't that costly as well, as perhaps more costly to do two procurements for the same system?
I think we need to look at what the thank you for the question, Mr. Treasurer. I think it would be helpful to understand how the cost is being structured, because the cost right now for the 1.0 system that is going to be delivered in the short term is much higher than what we see other states paying for it. That means that the 2.0 system is built into it. I think if we were to separate it out and get comparative prices for a 1.0 system, or perhaps a short-term lease, or perhaps extend the lease, and then purchase the 2.0 system, there would be greater transparency in the cost structure. Right now, the 2.0 system, the price for the 2.0 system is folded into the 1.0 system, the old standard system that's going to be delivered in the short term. I hope I'm not using too much jargon and confusing the matter.
About it.
I know. I'm sorry about that. I think to answer your question more concisely, I think that by separating out the contracts, there would be more transparency in the pricing overall. There would also be the opportunity to apply discounts. I think it would be more cost effective.
And just on the last point, because I do want to ask Mr. DeMarinis a question. We're less than 2 years away from the primary in 2028. I know you mentioned an expedited procurement, but even that, you know, it takes a while, and then almost anything we do of any significant money, it gets challenged and all those kinds of things. I'm wondering, is there a significant risk that we won't be ready? I mean, even if we get it approved, I mean, with testing and all of that, will we have confidence that we'll be ready if we have a significant delay to go through another procurement process? Is that a concern of your organization at all, that we won't be, I mean, we'll have the machines, I'm sure we'll come up with it, but there's a difference between having them and having confidence that you're ready to run an election, which is less than 2 years from now.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Treasurer. I don't think so. We've seen states procure systems in a matter of 6 months and get them up and running for general elections. Virginia did something actually in about half that time. But I think that if Maryland were to consider something like extending the current lease or doing a short-term lease for the 2028 election, as it fully vets and examines the 2.0, the new systems, the systems to the 2.0 standards that are to the 2021 standards before 2030, there could be a stopgap procurement that would enable the state to run their elections in 2028 securely, okay, accessibly, and accurately.
Thank you.
I have no questions for Ms.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I do have some for Administrator DeMarinis, but please go ahead first.
I was talking to a couple of my former colleagues, and so I wanted to raise an issue or two that they had that I told them I would ask. It says Maryland law requires the state board to certify and do a public demonstration on a voting system before it is acquired, and I think they quoted Section 911. Has that been done?
Yes. So we did 3 days worth of testing outside. We did in Baltimore, one on the Eastern Shore, one in Montgomery County, I believe. So we had three locations for 3 days. People came in, they tested the system. It was all a part of the state certification process. So yes, we did that. We made sure about that. And again, like, this system here is a federally certified, state certified system to move forward with it.
And then just the last question from our conversation, it was asked, what will happen if ES&S is unable to deliver the VBSG 2.0 certified system by 2030?
Well, then they don't meet their contractual obligations. We've done this before, where we actually had to go after our poll book vendor for not meeting our contractual obligations. We sued them for damages, and then we sought a new RFP. Where it is in the process would depend on how we want to move forward with it. We can either keep the system, but I would say that ES&S would be
held, you know, contractually liable for any damages. And we are monitoring these contracts. And this is something that we've done and I'm very good at. And the poll book company, which we basically said no more to, doesn't exist anymore. There's 50 states, as you know. And basically, you know, we all talk. And the ESNS's reputation is much on the line as everything else. So if they don't meet this contractual obligation, I don't foresee them being in the business much longer after that.
That's good enough for me.
So any further upgrades have the specific appropriate certifications that have
met. So like, right. If right now, if we move anything or touch anything on this voting system for 30, we have to go through another state certification. We'll bring it in front of our board. We go through the entire process, public demonstrations. We meet all those requirements again for this. We will even notify you that they've met the contractual obligations for that, if you want, because I think that that's important to say that, yes, moving forward for 2030 and beyond, that we will have the best system out there. And so right now, we're modernizing this. We're going to get ready for 28, because that's important. As I've mentioned before, the current system is no longer as much as it can be. It's good for 26. Like, I don't want to have any problems with that. It is good. But as things progress, as age happens on any new technology, we need to upgrade. And this is why we're doing it now. And it gives us enough lead time for 28 and enough lead time then for 30.
Do you have any other questions?
Thank you.
And lastly, I'd like to highlight item 55, which is a request from the Department of Human Services to enter into a 10-year intergovernmental lease with Prince George's County to centralize central health and human services all throughout the county. This is an exciting and, frankly, a long-awaited move. And so I'd like to invite Deputy Secretary Burnett to share more about this request. Madam Deputy Secretary, good morning.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Gloria Brown Burnett, and I have with me the director, newly 6 months old, the Prince George's County Department of Social Services, Jennifer Amaya Thompson. She wanted to be here for this very important piece of business. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on DGS Agenda 55LT, the proposed intergovernmental lease for the relocation of both the administrative and adult services operations of the Prince George's County Department of Social Services to the new Prince George's County Health and Human Services building located at Hampton Plaza on the Blue Line Corridor. I would like to first thank Treasurer Davis and this board for its steadfast leadership and support of this project over many years. This milestone reflects the power of sustained collaboration between the state of Maryland and Prince George's County. Without partnership, we would not be here today. This investment will improve access to essential services inside the Beltway by providing seniors and persons with navigating physical challenges within Prince George's County in a centralized location within the Beltway. The new location will better serve the residents of Prince George's County over the next 20 years by bringing together critical health and human service agencies, including the administrative operations of all three health and human service departments, along with a senior center, veterans affairs, aging, and other social services under one roof and in one accessible location. Through the local Department of Social Services, DHS serves monthly nearly 100,000 Prince Georgians with supplemental nutrition assistance program benefits, over 5,000 Prince Georgians with temporary cash assistance, over 600 Prince Georgians with temporary disability assistance, and nearly 100 Prince Georgians with adult protective services and other adult services programs. Following the board's approval, we will begin the relocation immediately and hope to be open to serve the county by the end of the summer. On behalf of the entire human services team, we want to thank County Executive Aisha Brayboy for finishing the relay race, as well as now Senator Angela Alsobrooks, then Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford, and prior County Executive Rashern Baker for their vision and leadership on this project. We recognize and applaud the advocacy of Senator Nick Charles and Chairman Ben Barnes. We thank the numerous staff teams at the county level, at DHS, and Undersecretary Chaudhry's DGS team for the years of planning and execution to get us where we are today. Thank you, and I'm prepared to take any questions.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Secretary, and congratulations to you both. I want to echo all the thankfulness to all the names that you mentioned before, but I specifically want to echo the treasurer, who it was his work and his leadership and his continued push on this for years that really helped to get this across the finish line. So thank you.
If I can, I just want to look, I grew up over in that area, not 10 minutes from where it is. I know it well. I know how important those programs are going to be to that particular community. I'm glad, and by just the names that you mentioned tells you how many, you know, how important that was, how many people had to be involved to make this happen. But you all got it done, and for that, I'm certainly eternally grateful. And I think there are going to be a lot of positive outcomes that result from this. So thank you for your steadfastness, commitment from the administration. You know, things get bumpy from time to time, but as long as we end up where we need to be, that's all that matters. So thank you all very much, and I look forward to the opening.
We look forward to having you both.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
With that, is there any further discussion on the DGS agenda? Sorry, I caught you mid.
So, nope, I'm good.
May I have a motion to approve the DGS agenda?
So moved.
And I will be the second. And so we'll close out. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. That concludes today's meeting.
Governor, may I have just a word? I've picked up bad habits from, you know, from being around a while and certainly from my predecessors here. But I have something. It's not for you or for anyone else, but I'd like an education. So at some point, if somebody from the Judicial Nominating Commission could give me a call, 410-260-0075, and educate me on the process, I would certainly appreciate it. One of the things I learned, and I see my guy, Tal McBranch, former member of the House of Delegates here. One of the things that we learned, Governor, when we first came in, first under Cass Taylor, then Mike Bush, Adrian Jones, and now Pena Melnick on the House side, and obviously it's much shorter on the Senate, Senator Miller and Senator Ferguson. One of the things we learned in our whole One Maryland, that was sort of our theme. And we learned that, you know, each one of us had something to contribute and that we were best, you know, when we're reflective of society at large. I say that to say I had a couple of citizens from Prince George's County call me about the Judicial Nominating Committee. And what they said to me was that there were two judges from the county who 2 years ago made the list for the Maryland State's Supreme Court. They were also up now for the appellate court, and they didn't make that list. And so they were concerned, how can you be deemed qualified for, you know, if you will, the major leagues, but then the one just below it, you're not qualified for that. And I didn't have an answer for them. And so I told them I would find out. And at first I just started looking stuff up. And then I was like, I better ask somebody, because I looked, and of the 17 members of the Judicial Nominating Committee, 9 came from one area. And then, first of all, only 5 of the 24 jurisdictions were represented, which is almost 20% of the commission comes from one area. And then 9 of the 17 came from one area. Another 4 came from a second area. So you're talking 13 of 17 or 75% from just 2 jurisdictions. So when I was getting into the whole One Maryland and it being reflective, I didn't think that was a reflection of society at large. Now, that's not to question anyone's, you know, competency, integrity, or anything like that. But when you have to go back and try to explain, you know, what things happen, And I thought of the larger conversation about the circuit court judges, and you know, it sort of have raged down here whether or not we should have retention elections or continue with the competitive elections. And it makes it hard to support a retention election, because when the outcome seems unfair, and I emphasize seems unfair, what alternative do you have when it's just a retention? You just got to take it. At least when a competitive election, you can go, all right, if I couldn't get the appointment, then I'll just run and let the people decide. So I'm asking, like I said, I gave that number. If anybody, I know they're very busy people and they're great jurists, but if they have an opportunity, if they can give, someone can give me a call and sort of just explain, you know, how this stuff works so that I can then relay it, you know, to the folks back home. Because you never stop. Once you get elected, you never stop being a public servant and constituent services. And they don't want to hear, well, I have this job. They don't. The public doesn't differentiate, and nor should they, about, you know, who does what. I elected you or voted for you in some capacity. And I agree with that sentiment. So that all of that was just a long winded way of saying, somebody, please, who have more knowledge about this stuff at that level, if you can give me a call and tell me how it works so I can relay it to other Marylanders, I'd be much obliged.
Yeah, thank you. First, I cannot believe you just gave your phone number away.
That wasn't my personal show. I gave the number. They could have Googled anyway.
A lot of people are testing it out right now. But I have to tell you, especially, frankly, and I know this is not the venue for it, on a lot of those circuit court conversations, I think that is, frankly, a long overdue conversation within the state. But I have to say that I know someone from the JNC will give you a shout. I have been overwhelmed by the performance of the JNC and the type of jurists that they have pushed in my direction just during these 3.5 years. The work, the diligence. And to your point, something that was a core criteria was, is it a reflection of our state? It is a reflection of not just the, you know, not just the geographic and demographic, but also the excellence of the state. And I'm grateful for the work that they have continued to do for these past 3.5 years all throughout the state of Maryland. But I am sure they are going to give you a call. Anything else?
No, I got to get out of here. I got a funeral, guys, I got to get to. But I still have to, you know, still doing that constituent services. So we'll do that and have a great day.
Yes. Well, that concludes today's meeting of the Board of Public Works. The next meeting will be on August 5th. Thank you all, and we are adjourned.